You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap? Here's Parisha.
Greetings and welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. We're now working presently on the book Inside the Earth and having a fantastic trip on inner earth travels. Okay, and this is Parisha, your host. And my co-host this week, Dean, lives in Sydney and is a lover of the forest and an engineer, an actual person that works in regards to definitely furnishing more beauty in our world through her work. And we have Joyce Mullenhauer, who is an RN that actually has studied more health in depth things and actually is a doctor of neuropath and definitely holistic medicine. We have Trina, and Trina Cooper is actually in Denver somewhere, I think it's Broomfield, isn't it? Yeah, okay, it's Broomfield. And it's a beautiful little community outside of Denver. Okay. And Trina does a lot of different things. She actually is a very strong teacher of spirituality, but she also participates in a family business to where they do major productions. And they just got to do one. I think they're in Florida, and it's called The Experience, to where they bring together people that are actually changing lives by doing restoration and refurbishing things after tremendous weather, whatever, fires and all of that. So Trina does a lot of things with that. Then we have Mike Dillar, who is actually a structure engineer and very much inclined now to share his wisdom in life. So he teaches at the college as well. Sometime you'll have to tell us what subjects are you dealing with, Mike. And then we have Rosemary Heyer, who is in Frankfurt, Germany. And Rosemary has actually worked in translations and teaching English in Germany, and she's also been what I would consider a spiritual voyager, where she takes people to sacred areas and helps them learn the ancient teachings and cultures of people. And she does a lot of other particular work too, as far as teaching good business information and teaching people to actually succeed at higher levels. So all of my co-hosts are very active people in other people's lives as well as their own, and bringing about all that they can do in assisting life and change for people. We're all motivated to actually help people succeed. With everyone's success, we succeed in ourselves and making sure that we're enhancing lives, even if we do them one-on-one or in large groups. So when we're getting into the Inside the Earth, we're about halfway there, okay? And we've been really checking it out, looking at it, and each one of my co-hosts will actually share some part of the few pages that we're going to deal with today. And one of the things that would impress me was actually the discussion within these particular pages of the subcultures that are actually within the earth. I have very strong influence and relationships with the Hopi natives of Arizona. And I've had so many of the old ones share about the people in the inner earth, and they definitely make that journey on a quite often basis. And in it, you have to become a person who's willing to accept what would probably be considered supernatural or very high-leveled esoteric teachings, because we are all that and then some, and yet we've never really accepted the particular power and the particular things that we are capable of, okay? And when we start reading this book, you actually get a wonderful education. What I love about it is while there are some of the things that differ from different people that I know that do take this journey, it actually teaches you to deal with the fact that there are certain requirements that have to do with the fact that we can break down cellularly and move into another vibration. And therefore, that supports, as far as I'm concerned, that people like myself and others can actually see people who are departed or not with body anymore. And then there's that world that science is proving to us. There's so many different levels to this physical third dimensional life we have that's way beyond it as well as way below it. So we need to open ourselves to what this book is suggesting that we do, would change our vibration. And you don't really have that far to go. It's within ourselves that we create the walls that we're talking about actually resolving in this book. And one of those, like I said, is actually with the subcultures. There's many times in ceremonies and stuff, I've seen things that I would not consider worldly. And they are visitors from the inner earth, and some are extraterrestrials. Whether you're into a UFO or not, science has proven that. And in fact, and presently, they're starting to appear very openly in large communities so that cities and larger community can see them. So things are changes. We need to change with them. And as we go through this book, I think you could not read this book without having something in the neural net actually have to shift, because it grabs you and takes you into the story and into sharing the particular, Radu is actually our author. We share his position and thoughts, and then he shows us in and how he has to make his own transition to understand what he's actually doing and learning. So when we talk about subcultures, there is a term in our language, in many languages. And when it comes down to actually making it, maybe even translating it into English, it would say more shades of life. It would represent the spectrum or gradient of color. And then it would be, the word would actually mean life. So the particular, what I would consider subcultures that are in the inner earth actually come upon the earth. We have truthful stories about Sasquatch and a whole lot of other things that are cited that we see that the media poof-poofs and doesn't want to go there. And actually the authorities don't want to talk about it either, because they don't have solutions or particular ways that they can actually tell us they're in control of it. So it doesn't work at all. One of those places happens to be White Sands. And in White Sands, what I've heard with the indigenous family, okay, is that once it was an entrance, it was definitely an entrance into our inner earth. And that is the reason the sands are totally different there than would be the environment around it. They said in the closing of that, the results was what we now see is the White Sands. And they go through a lot of very beautiful stories in sharing the beings that live and had moved in that time. And most of that would fall into with what they would consider the teachings of the Anasazi. So there are so many ways we could go with this. And after we actually share a few pages here with you, my co-host and I would really like to share some of our own reflections of what this could be and our own interest in actually exploring all of these very, very magical things. So we're going to start out with Geraldine there in Sydney. Geraldine, can you speak up and share with us some of the information you shared?
Definitely can. And I'm excited to say we're starting in chapter 3. So we are moving into the center of the earth. And here one, it's Thomas Sissy, the ancient root. And a key part of this page again is that looking at conditioning. So as we move through the beginning, we start by saying, our main character has been meditating. And in this, we see that the meditating, what keeps coming up is meditating is like the center of the earth. We're going to the void when we meditate, going to where anything can be possible. And this journey is into the center of the earth, sort of understand it and get to a point where there's some sort of thing clicking. Our main person, Cesar, lets us know that he's meditating on what he heard. So he's not trying to figure it out. He's not trying to do the science of it. He's not trying to compare it to what it was before. And as the rest of the page goes, when we move into what's called the surprise of the second tunnel, again, it brings up the scientific dogma. And dogma is not a negative word. It just means it's said in such a way that it makes you think it's a fact. And science will tell you it's not facts. It's the best known belief that they have at the time. And as previous chapters have shown, that can be based on a whole lot prejudices. So here we are meditating to allow some truth in.
All right. That's good. Good. Now, Joyce, you have things that can follow up.
I do. I love the fact that on this page 111, he actually speaks about, this is Radu, our author now, having this deep emotion that melted him. So that's the kind of what would you even say, not just emotional, energy state that the author has walked into as he's learning what the next step is for going on the journey that he's doing with Cesar. So on page 112, there's an absolutely marvelous diagram to help us understand what exactly he's traveling through. And so they show the tunnel where they enter. And at this particular moment, they're looking at a hologram. They're not actually going through it. So what my sensation was as I read this page was I felt like I was being prepared, that I was going to be going on this journey. And it just gives me shivers to realize how visual he succeeds in making this journey. So what the consul, which apparently is some kind of luxury, I don't even know if it's way beyond a computer. It definitely has a board for them to click into to send a message out and a screen for them to receive. And the screen is described as glossy. So this is not just a regular TV or computer screen that we're accustomed to. This is way beyond that. It almost gave me the feeling that there's gold value or level in this particular console, that they call it. So he's standing there with Cesar, and Cesar's typing in some orders on the screen. And to start with, there's just graphics that they can't make any sense of. And then they start seeing this tunnel. And it's just a fascinating tunnel because it starts off with a very gradual slant. There's crystals right at the entrance that they've already had some introduction about. And then they get to a place where it's very distorted. And at just past that distortion, it broadens. It becomes this huge cube. And they talk about one section of it kind of overlapping the other. And so the word bifurcation is used. And the top level keeps on going straight down to, or appears on the screen anyway, that it's going to continue down into the earth. The other one starts to curve. And there's an area where there's undulating motion. And I just think this is fabulous that on a screen, all of this came through. So we're being prepared for what they're actually going to experience.
It's fantastic. Very, very good. You're getting me excited. So you're all ready to go. Are you packed up? Can you do this?
I don't think I need a pack. I think I just need to go.
All right. Trina, what could you bring us on that?
So as we move on to 113, Cesar actually indicates to Radu that they're going to take this slightly angled tunnel. And he says to Radu that it's really important that they go that way because Radu needs to experience some of the peculiarities, some of these inner earth cities and beings, and actually be able to handle it before they go further into the earth. And so the place they're going is a living city that's called Tumasis. Now, Radu kind of steps back a little bit at this point and starts talking about the trips. And he says a lot of these trips are based on protocols. They're based on whether they're looking for information, whether it's a commercial or military, could be political reasons. And this is only his second trip in, where Cesar's actually done 34. A couple of them he's done basically with Romanian and American diplomats or military, but he's actually done 27 of them on his own. And Radu knows a lot about it because if you remember, he's the one that's been hired to document and create all the documents for the general file. So he has an idea of what's going on, but he hasn't experienced it.
Wonderful. Now, go ahead.
You got a couple more points. Just that the reason why they're bringing this forward, and the Secret Service doesn't like it, but the reason they're bringing it forward is basically because they want to help the general population to understand and move to a higher evolution. And most officials don't get this because they're not trained in the esoteric. They treat things like they're a threat. And also, they treat them like issues that have to be controlled. And as long as you keep that kind of mindset, he says you're never going to understand what's going on in the inner earth.
Point taken. Very, very good. Yes, absolutely. And then we come in and we have Mike. You have some things you'd like to add?
Sure. So starting off on page 114, as we've heard, many senior government officials don't really believe the reality within the earth. They don't understand the ultra-secret reports that they get to see for two reasons. One is a lack of conceptual training, and two is the habit of relying too much on those advanced technologies and actions specific just to the physical plane. So Radu says that all of the money and effort that's expended doesn't guarantee a correct understanding of the situation. Basically, it doesn't matter how much energy you expend on finding the answer, you'll never succeed if you're looking in the wrong place. He summarizes the situation very concisely when he says that military chiefs and Earth's leaders are tributaries of the mental habits and education system in which they live. So, in other words, the people who make the decisions for us as a country and the military leaders who are charged with defending our way of life and who wield enormous physical power are themselves the product of a system that is embarrassingly limited in perspective. There's also the serious matter of interference from the government. Let's face it, it's difficult to combine the reality of subtle higher dimensions with the everyday concrete reality of government. Low vibrational frequency ideas and activities like conquering new territories, controlling the population, allocating resources, political and military intrigues, etc., they don't mix very well with the subtle reality of higher dimensions and worlds. And as a result, Earth's leaders don't understand almost anything about the phenomenon that occurs when the inner Earth is penetrated, and that's why they don't have access there. At such an intense level of collaboration between civilizations, problems can only be solved if there's a qualitative leap of consciousness. The old way of thinking and acting with divisions of territories and geostrategic influences among world leaders is not only awkward in such a case, but completely ineffective. So this is what Caesar's been dedicated to since the death of General Abeda.
This is really good. And when you say that, like these are all exciting points you're making and things, while you're reading the different pages, and we can go back as well as go forward, because I know that you have not held to just reading the few pages that you cover on the show, right? You're probably all over through this book and starting again at that point. But when we look at what's being shared, and then we look at the world today and we see all of the controversial things and all of the changes it's making and the challenges, the wonderful challenges it's going to make people actually open up more. Okay. Where do you think and see something like this in the world? How real is this to you? Any one of you could answer.
I have a comment I'd like to make that I think touches on what you're saying, Grandmother, is that as I've been reading through this, especially as we finished the end of the previous chapter and started to move into this chapter, I have to admit I kind of got fed up of Radu telling us over and over and over again how scientists today have this lousy attitude and a bad perspective. And I almost, you know, wanted to shake the book and say, all right, I got it. But then I realized that, you know, he did that for a reason, because in fact, it, you know, we got to get hit over the head a few times with this idea before it really sinks in that, you know, that it's not all physical. It's not all physical. There's a whole bunch of other stuff going on that physical is probably this much. So I'm not sure if that gets where you're going, but with me, it's made me look at things and say, what I see is probably this much of what's really there. And wow. That's pretty earth-shattering. So I guess I kind of understand why he beat it into me throughout that first two chapters.
And listen, you and I often speak of Nassim on the show and that. And basically the question that set the field, the scientists afire with him, was when he said, okay, I see the exam, you know, the illustration here is this human blowing up this balloon, and they're explaining all this thing in space and everything else. And then, I mean, what Nassim asked him at that point, he talks about this great, so I hope our listeners are actually going to check it out. And he actually said, okay, I understand that. I understand what your perspective is with space, but I really want to know who is it that's blowing up balloon, okay? And so that leads you into a whole different subject on, well, then what is physical? Yet, you know, in definitely in spiritual thinking these days, there's this little clip of a response that you're not the body, okay? Well, we are the body, but the body isn't everything, okay? The physical world is physical matter, yes, but it's just a very minor part of it, to where when we say, like Michael, for those of you who can't see us and it's not podcast, Michael was measuring like about half an inch with his fingers. And in that, that's even way too big, because what is not physical is 99.9, and there's a whole stream, if not a mile, of nines behind that. So we're talking about less than 1%. That's physical. Okay, and then look at us. We make everything. The only thing that we really feel we know is the physical. If we can look at it, you know, describe it, touch it, you know, interrelate with it and everything, that's where we're at. And these scientists have been around for how long? I mean, quantum physics has been up and discussed for 120 years. And we don't know anything about it. We're just, you know, I mean, I started talking about it 60 years. And some of you have been with me in the wave of stuff that come back off of that, right? Oh, she's crazy, she's weird and everything else. So you're followed right along with that because you're reading and looking at the same thing I am. But even as much as 50 years ago, people were not ready to hear this. People weren't prepared at all to think anything like that, you know, that there is a bigger world beyond the physical matter that we think is everything. And yet we don't have any control of it. It controls us. That's, I feel in this book, it tells the story that we have, especially with the characters, is it constantly references back and forth with the advanced thinker, who is actually the person teaching, and then the student who is actually learning and has some degree of understanding of spirit and non-matter, right? But he still has to deal with his own, because that the program and the, you know, neural net's already wired, right? And so it's so wonderful to relate to that, because many times when he gives the example of his own experience with it, I have to laugh because I know that that's such a familiar one. You know what I mean? I know we're all relating to that as well. So when we're looking at that, but I want you guys to share, it's okay right now with what you feel it's explained. As teachers, each of you, what would you want to actually give a presentation or use any and all of this which you've learned and the lot more that you had before you read this book? You know, give me a three or four minute summary here, because we only are working with an hour, of exactly what you feel the impact of this book is in where you would hope to see it go and what you hope humanity will take from it. Any one of you can start. We could probably do the order here, which is Geraldine. Geraldine, you want to give that a crack?
Absolutely. And a key part that keeps coming up for me, it's similar. It's the science is not there. The scientists are this, the scientists are that. And on paper, I'm a scientist. On paper, you know, there's a piece of paper that says Bachelor of Science, first class honors, la, 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 la. And I think even in the things that I write, it wasn't until I became more in touch with ancient wisdoms that the questions that I had unanswered started to be answered. So the piece of paper is something to respect. There is a process that's done. It's really helped me as a bridge, but it didn't have the answers. And what the book keeps saying is it doesn't have the answers, because science is often this continuation of the previous thought. So the main paradigm that comes over and over is there is a necessity to jump out. Otherwise, myself, otherwise, a general thing of humanity is that we improve ourselves incrementally based on the foundations that we have. And that's going to give us more of the same. So then the book also tells us that there are tools to actually get on a different track. And it doesn't mean you have to give everything away. And doesn't mean you have to call yourself bad for not knowing it already. It doesn't mean you have to condemn scientists or teachers or anybody else. Even on this page 111, where it says he's realizing that this journey could result in an alteration of the ordinary consciousness. And it's very likely, this is Cesar talking, that my own subconscious was reacting in this way to defend my egocentric conceptions and prejudices that had been fostered and fixed by living in a modern society, and further, it was trying to stop me. And that line, even when I say it, I feel something here, like I feel a little bit of my heart opening, because it's like if Cesar is saying that he's recognizing this and it's still okay for him to do it, then it's okay for all of us. We can completely put aside who we thought we were, because in any moment we're brand new. Any moment we can open our minds. And another thing to wrap it up in 3 minutes is applying this then to other areas of life. So, for example, the recent blog post written was about how this parallels with ancient history. Now that I'm opening up and saying, okay, here's a difference in perspectives on geology, and then the universe starts to provide things in my face that I look at, which are different aspects of ancient history. And I love ancient history. Yes, tick. At high school, came first. So what? What I came first in was not completely accurate to any extent. So it's a case of unlearning. So it doesn't matter how much information you've got in the past. It's how open are you right now to be allowing. And as the book said, be allowing of information and then meditate, see what comes forward. Talk to the ancient peoples, talk to traditional peoples, talk to children. Because as he said here, we go to defend the egocentric conceptions and prejudices that have been fostered and fixed by living in modern society. So be gentle to yourself. Understand it's there. Don't condemn yourself. And I am talking to myself. Don't condemn yourself because you have those. Recognize them, because that allows you to spring out.
That's great. I agree with you. Don't measure yourself and judge yourself on it. You've done the best you can with the limited amount of environmental intelligence around you. I'm looking at the definition of science, because we use that word a lot. And I realize all of the particular people I work with that are very high level scientists, they do not call themselves scientists. They lean more toward description of an alchemist. But for the particular definition here, it says the intellectual and practical activity encompassing the systematic study of the structure and behavior of the physical and natural world through observation and experiment. And so I think that it does go, the word practical just doesn't fit in here. When you start saying we're going to be practical about something, okay, you've just killed half of the information, okay? And when we say the systematic study, okay, it's saying that the institutions are the systematic study. And then I'm going to go back to our friend Nassim again, to where he wouldn't go in a university to study and learn physics, because he realized they're going to try to make him fit in the box. And that's what the diplomas and the papers say. You're going to have to do it this way. This is the way you fit into the system. And for me, it's like I'm definitely there, because I've been a renegade to that. All of the education that I got, and I've had tremendous background of education, I only found that it left so many more questions. It just stimulated me to go off the grid and find my answers. So, yeah, we want to look at the fact that in the definition of science, it says that we are to discover and research and look in depth. And I don't think that the people who actually tried to teach us anything look to the fact that it's changing. Every time we describe it, we change it. And that change is inevitable and unrelentless. So it does work that way. So let's see, Joyce, what do you have? How would you sum this up?
Well, I kind of have my own vision of what I feel this represents. I trust that the craziness that we are going through right now is giving people a chance to say, what we have had didn't work. So opening their thoughts to trying to figure out something different for themselves. So expanding that kind of day-to-day view something like knowledge now that the planet is not just a surface existence. It's got a whole lot more to it. I trust that anyone exposed to this information will have an expansion of their own beliefs of who they are and what they might find is possible in their life. So that's pretty much where I sit with this right now.
And it's very, very powerful with that. And like right now, when we, in everything we do, being my major root, being in Native America, okay, the very fact that I grew up understanding that, when we use the term Earth Mother, it means different than I watch non-Native people saying it. Non-Native people purely relate when they say that to the physical beauty, the canyons, the mountains, the trees, all of the beautiful things that is definitely the emanation of the planet. But when Natives say that, they realize that the planet is a being and that each planet and everything that we look out and see, the stars, the moon and everything, is of itself an intelligence and a being. And that's not easy to get across to people who live purely on the edge of knowing nothingness, okay, and not doing anything but the 9 to 5 and, you know, the football game and the TV. You can't, to try and get a person's concept to that. I've even found that very involved and educated students don't actually and have not actually comprehended that the Earth is an entity and that all the planets fit within the body of something else, just like we fit in to be in the cells of the planet, and that the planet herself has no existence no more than we do. When you measure that 0.5% that is matter, you're talking about what you consider the density of the Earth. And you have to be able to move in a way that you have become that thinking to actually realize, yes, you can walk through the wall of that rock or anything. And yet it is not commonly known or actually discussed or even believed, okay? And that the book is taking you there to giving you some leeway of that. Some of it can still be the physical understanding. But the basic thing is in all of this, it's saying the Earth, like us, is an illusion of matter, okay? And that therefore, the frequencies that they keep talking about is something we're capable of. In fact, not only are we capable with, we're totally attuned to it. So that when we finish our track through life and our journey through experiencing third dimension as a physical body that has been engineered, by the way, okay, that we actually continue, that it's just one minute part of the totality of everlasting that we are. And so you have to get into going deeper into your existence and exactly what we are to actually understand what we're actually, being exposed to in this book and the extendedness of the teachings that's in it. And that we're getting to where the young people, I love talking to young people who have picked up the sciences. And after the first year, every one of them is want to go for research because they realize the books they're reading and everything else is so far beyond what technology's already given them. So they're getting to where they're either pulling out from school, and I don't know how healthy that is. It's a matter that our universities need to become a universe of information and all the leading edge discovery of that. And I have still faith that that can happen. But at this point, you're very, very right on with that. And it's good. It's good to see you all thinking in that way as well. So Trina, what about you? What would you sum it up to be? How do you see it?
Well, I have a really interesting take for me on this, which is what's really been bringing out is the importance. And I hear everybody saying being open, being accepting.
Yeah.
And only on these pages, especially just toward the end here that Mike talked about, he said that Caesar and Colonel Obadiah had long grasped the aspects of what was needed. And that is the fact that so much of the world leaders right now, so many of the people are locked in kind of their boxes that in here he puts it as their tributaries of mental habits and educational system that they've been brought up in. But if we're going to open ourselves up and really embrace people and really love people, we need to meet them where they are. And he's saying in here that Caesar and General Obadiah were excellent at this. They were willing to learn. They were willing to open themselves up and come at the conversations where they were working as a bridge to bring more information. They keep saying, it's important for us to bring this information forward. It's important in human evolution right now. And it's really important for all of us to really get past the idea that everything is threatening, you know, move out of the fear piece. We don't have to worry about, you know, it's like control, fear, all those things are what's driving so much in the world right now. And if you think about connecting with inner earth beings, or if you think about connecting with extraterrestrials, or you just think about connecting with a different culture, you first have to open yourselves up, and then you need to learn about it, and you need to hear them. You really need to listen and hear them. And then you can speak to them and allow them to have conversations so that they understand where you're coming from. And it's obvious that this department really may have had other ideas in the beginning, but that these key leaders that are here saw a greater picture, a bigger picture of what could happen. And they moved from that place, from the heart, and, you know, we're opening and welcoming. And I think that's a place where we're at right now, is that we all as human beings have to move into that place in order to make this world a great place to be.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. And Mike, what do you would like to add? Give me a place you want to see this go in the future.
Well, I think a couple of things come to mind. Number one, I think, Geraldine, you need to be a little less tough on yourself. And I don't think we so much as scientists have to unlearn what we've learned. We simply need to put it in the right perspective. You know, as grandmother said, what the physical represents is such a small percentage, but there's nothing wrong with having understood that and learned that and studied that. We learned that part. Now we got to be open to the other part. The problem comes is when we're not open. And I think that's what this book is trying to tell us is, okay, we've got this, we've beat it, but wait a sec, what's happening over there? You know, we're not looking over there, you know? And I think that's the message that I'm getting out of this whole book. And, you know, as I went through this over the last couple of weeks, I was kind of going through and I realized that the previous chapter was called The Great Controversy. And the gate, you know, he was talking about whether the earth is solid or not, but this whole thing is about a great controversy. And the great controversy is, you know, can we see everything that's real, or is there a whole bunch of stuff out there that we can't see, can't describe, and don't know anything about yet and are too damn proud to admit, you know? Yeah. And I think that's what it's about. And he says sometimes things cannot be solved through common methods because they belong to a different level of knowledge. And I was thinking of, you know, being a scientist, I was thinking of calculus. Calculus was developed because it solves problems you couldn't solve another way with a regular math. So, you know, we have to be willing and open to say we don't know everything. And I think the arrogance that sometimes the scientific community demonstrates is probably its biggest weakness, because, you know, the way scientists approach things, I think, is not bad. I think the problem is they think they already know the answers when they go looking for them. And so, you know, they don't want stuff that's outside of the bounds of, I mean, they, and I shouldn't say they, because I think there's a lot of generally honest people who are looking for answers, but I think that there's a lot of pressure from the system to keep us within the bounds of what's accepted medically, scientifically. And I think that's just science. This society, our society does that to us. So to be a free thinker is to say, I want to step outside that, because there's a whole bunch, there's a big world out there that we know nothing about. And maybe it's a little philosophical what I'm saying, but that's what this book is doing to me, is it's making me look at this whole idea of science from a philosophical perspective.
And it, you know, I would hope that you're all actually looking at it as well, as to know that what we call science doesn't know everything and isn't actually necessarily right either, because they only have a bite of something, not the whole of something, okay? And that basically that, you know, when you hear something, you take it. I want to use the fact with the vaccination situation that everybody's experiencing right now. you got all kinds of different houses of thought in the science community. You got people that are saying, oh, it's not going to harm you. Then you have people that give you 15 minutes of hearing about all the things in it, and it's how it's going to affect and mutate different things. You know, so scientists don't all agree. And not, you know, you cannot say who is and who isn't right, okay, because they all are looking at the elephant from some place of it, okay. And so you have to hear all of that and then use your own genius to put it together to where it fits for you. And then you can at least walk a ways with it till you come up on something you're going to add to it or something you're going to take away from it. It's sort of like coming to the crossroads and you got to decide go left or right. So everything that we're calling science is someone's perspective of something that has been asked, okay? And then at this point, you need to listen to that and maybe the variety of responses to that. And then you're still going to have to walk with it yourself. And unless you're allowing yourself to explore so much of the unknown, so many things that would not be natural interest to you, is what's really changing now. And it's sad for me to see that the media is actually showing such powerful control right now and not actually giving factual information and withholding leading edge information. And it's like, so the scientist that really has an objection to the vaccines not being given audience. You just hear the ones that the particular monopoly wants you to know. You know what I mean? And that's what I consider extremely dangerous. I've had my own bout and round with newspapers and media. And I have found that, in fact, myself, I've become very skeptical because I don't trust much of anything that they print. I've realized how they exaggerate and totally do a 180-degree turn on something and put their own perspective in there. But like right now, what's happening, even just with 2 or 3 days ago, that mainstream media did cover that over Texas and a couple of different states that they actually cited UFOs, and they are actually calling them UFOs. And then there's a lot of people coming out of the community that I would not consider UFO people. They are scientists that have been studying a lot of things that are happening and realize there's phenomena that we do not understand and that we really are not the experts to talk about it, that we need to be open with it to just see where it's going, because some people say they're here to eat us, we're the garden, okay? And then you have other people that'll say, you know, they're trying to interject and give us assistance and work with this and are finally going to have to take over because humans don't know what they're doing anyway. I mean, you can get to the crazies, but I don't shut any of it off. And I know most of you don't. I listen to all of the sides and all the stories on it and everything, and then always I have a feeling that with everything else I know, I can't, you know, when we use the word unknown, I'm 80 years old and I don't think there's been a day in my whole life, and I can't count for anything maybe as a toddler, but in my whole life that is an unknown. My days are filled with unknown because I open the books to everything. I look at everything. I travel and go to places that, you know, they say I can't go or I shouldn't go or whatever. I want to know that. And so I have a broad spectrum of curiosity and I don't block anything out. But you at some point do have to make peace with yourself and what you're willing to accept and work with. And I think at this point, what humanity's experience is that they've never been given that. While we say America is a democracy and that we have the freedom of choice and everything, that's not true either, because there's always been someone's control, rule, or regulation around something. And I'm not going to fault that, because obviously we humans had to do something that actually brought on the need to consider whether we move with that. I over the last 5 years, went back to check out Stonehenge. And I'd seen Stonehenge probably 35 years ago. And today it's not real anymore. They put a fence around it and it's almost sad. It's so, you know, I just knew that I didn't even want to walk up close to it anymore. I saw it at a probably, you know, a good 15, 20 feet back. And I just felt sad. It's like we have become people that you need to go over and, you know, here's this enormous part of a creation and a history and an ancient part of us. And people was going over there, taking their little hammer and their things, breaking off pieces of it. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, what is that that you think that that's going to change your life, that you just desecrated something? You know what I mean? So we do that. We create the need to make the rules and regulations. I think that's something confirming what I said. Okay. So we got sirens going. But anyway, like for me, it's really important that I remain curious and look at things, because the things that I experience now, and I don't live in mainstream. I know that, and I've had to accept that over my life, and nor am I interested in trying to be in mainstream. But at the same time, I feel that there is so much in life that every day is a journey. And I don't care if you're doing 9 to 5 and it's the football game or whatever, it going on inside our mind, not just our brain, our mind and our body is a complete book of itself. And I think that we're going to come to the point now. I mean, all of the people that I talk to and all the prophecies and actually the world I live in, we realize that what we call aliens are already on this planet and exist as we see them as ourselves, and that they are here to actually communicate and help us do a catching up. And that many prophecies of what we have is so real and on time right now. It's actually creates the sense of where you can't have a doubt about any of it because it's detailed to the letter. But right now is the time that we need to look at this, and you all are well versed in that. And it's like, so let's look at this. If in as you are actually accepting what you're reading and learning, and you were planning on going into this journey, knowing that it's going to take everything it says it's needed. Everything that it says it's needed within you, I would like you to tell me, how is your journey? What do you do next? Take some minutes to do that. We're pretty much on 6:46 now. So we got 15 minutes. Well, you know, you're packed, you're ready to do the journey. How would you see if anything you would do different than what you're hearing in the book? When you're reading, do you actually hear yourself saying, well, I would think we would do this, or I would think it could go that way or this way? Are you engaging at all? Anybody? We can start with Mike and then you can go backwards on this.
Wow. Okay. I think that to me, it's almost like I'm in awe. I would be in awe standing in front of this opening thinking, I know I have to go, I know I have to get to this higher vibration. And you know me, I always have to figure out how things work and why they work and all that kind of stuff. So I think my biggest concern would be, can I get out of my own way? And yes. Just, can I get out of my own way? I think for me, that would probably be my biggest challenge, would be to get out of my own way and just go with the flow, sort of thing. I guess that's sort of how that's probably my biggest challenge most of the time with meditating and stuff, is just getting out of my own way.
You need to go into the nothingness, Michael, and resolve that engineer brain you have, and especially
engineer brain. Do that. It serves me well. I just got to expand it a little.
All right, Trina, how would you answer that?
Wow. A little bit like Mike, because, you know, the mind always seems to like be chattering and I need to do this and maybe not. But, you know, you hear controlling the emotion is so important too. And sometimes with these, I get like so excited about being able to do it. It's like, okay, you got to calm yourself down a little bit. You got to keep yourself together. But at the same time, you know, listening to Radu and you hear that, you hear some of what he's going through. I mean, to me, I'm always in awe when I go to some of these places and I want to learn more and I want to take it in and I want to understand what's going on. And so really preparing for it, really being ready for it. And, but again, keeping myself in check because of, you don't want to go blubbering all over somebody or, you know, it's like, you don't know who you're going to meet and, you know, what are you supposed to do? So all the questions come up in me and then it's like, okay, sit down, pull yourself, you know, center yourself and breathe. that kind of thing. So really just getting as prepared as possible to be able to go in and then staying super curious about, you know, what you actually experience.
I hear, and I'm sure everybody else is hearing that, you're talking, you're moving to control. And everything mm-hmm. that you're doing, you say that you need to open up, but then you say you have to calm down, you have to do this, you have to do that. So you need to hear yourself and catch yourself with that, because then our own body mind tells us what we're doing to hold ourselves back.
And exactly. Right,
and that you need to look at, you know, how you said that. So it's cool. It's real cool because it's making you look at some things that you maybe don't hear anymore. You know what I mean?
And I appreciate you saying that, because I'm sure there's a lot of people that are kind of in the same boat too.
Yeah, I think it would be the majority. I don't think you're not your own at all.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Joyce, what would you sum up on that?
There's a couple of sentences here in the book that I think touch a little bit on where I would go with that. Everything seems to be a matter of inner preparation for the being, an aspect that involves our level of consciousness. Our access to the spirituality within the earth depends on the stage we have reached. So I see that as a huge, colossal goal. And I can't say I have found the exact path to get myself there, but I recognize that with living as a spiritual being more of my day, I'll have a better chance of being more conscious of what this would involve.
It's real good. Do you feel reading this, Joyce, has helped you come in greater contact with some of the particular openings that you have?
Well, what it has helped me realize is in talking to people, not necessarily about this book, but about their lives, people are hungry to do it different, to be different. So I tell people about this book, and I tell people about my reaction to this book. And it makes for a conversation to allow people to think about, well, have I ever even considered any of that?
I'm sure that some of the serious people look at you and say, well, she's really out there.
I'm delighted. There's less of that.
I mean, well, you deliver it in such delighted ways and with such heart, you know, that I'm sure they have to feel the feelings in that, you know, and everything. But like I said, well, the we that we are, and there's many, 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 many of us, we have our own culture. We have our own level of existence within the many other cultural levels of existence. And I've explored so many of those cultures. Okay, I have. And in it, I'm happy with the one I'm in. I'm in the nut I need to be in, and I'm staying in it. You know, I mean, it's like, so when we begin to look at this and explore this, every one of you co-hosts have the realization you can make it to the inner earth. You know that. Somewhere deep inside, you'll start stuttering and you'll cripple yourself with words trying to find the right way to say it or a way to express it in the volume that you're feeling it. But what tickles me is that the people who read this, and a lot of them are responding to my social media, they all say, you know, they feel in their heart of hearts that if they could find somebody that would take them, they're all asking me to take them there, that they believe they can truly do this and make that change in vibration. That inspires me. That inspires me that when I hear the seriousness of their statement and the determination in that, you know, that's what's going to help our world find its way through all of these challenges, and that is because that is real. We can do it. This does not make special of these characters you're reading about. You just need to pay attention to what they're telling you. You need to be looking for, and what I'm saying, you need to be look. Okay, that's another control word here. But at this point, it is change. There are things that need to change. And in that, as we pursue those changes, we still lift ourselves into an euphoria of light and love and experience. And I hear that in you. I hear that a lot in you, because you get excited in it, and I can see the sparkle in your eye, and it's like, you know, you could hear it in the way you're breathing and stuff. You accept that.
And I think that that basically, to me, is why this book club is what it is, and that we actually explore how we explore the esoteric, the physical, and all the many levels of cultures of our world. And it is real to us. It's very real to us. And that you're becoming to understand something about yourselves. I mean, all of our years of us actually tracking and going and doing a lot of things together. When I look out over that time, and especially with you, my co-host, as we have been very close and inside each other's personal space, we are a collective consciousness. And at this point, when I look at that, I realize that you're starting to open to a point of yourself that you understand that there's really nothing you can't do, and that you're starting to accept that there's far more to you than what you have ever allowed. And now that says for me is that you're getting over yourself. And you all have heard that for years, yet when you get too much into that, get over yourself and look at this. Just forget about having an opinion or a judgment. Just look at this, you know. And so you're doing that. And it's so exciting to work with you these days, because I realize when you talk and when you're sharing, you have gone that next step. And I wouldn't hesitate to think any one of you sooner than maybe even you've planned. You definitely can make that journey. And so we're going to let Geraldine kind of wrap it up for us. So Geraldine, put your two cents in here and tell us how you feel about the question. How do you feel this has helped you, and what's your journey with this?
When you asked, 5 dot points went down. So I'll just mention those in order. The first was to reflect on the extraordinary experiences that I've already had in life. And many of them have been by your side. Or they've been in places when I felt you, or the wind, or, you know, it's reflecting on that, because there's a part of that, the whole neural net says, see, that's that. And then there's meditation, of course, and that's a discipline. But again, it's for the neurons, because this is about the thoughts and our frequency. So it is applying the time like going to a gym. So that's the next one. The third one was information for the neurons. And this has actually been quite exciting for me so far, in that whether it's Gaia or a different podcast, information has come in from other directions that has built like a picture. It's almost like I've had a piece. The book has given a piece. The teachings have given a piece. And then there's a different voice and a different viewpoint, a different frequency. And it's like, okay. It drops in. So keep open to new information that allows the building of the multitude of what this is. Because again, that helps the neurons. Oh, they're saying the same thing. These two people haven't spoken to each other. Here's the same message. And it could be a different message from my original program. So I'm moving the stream of where my neurons went to a different way. The fourth one is the everything. Be here, present time. The fifth one is there is no past, and we can change the past. And we've had that with our discussions about other books on this as well. So they're my 5 that I would keep that already is in progress. But in terms of the inner earth, in terms of the book, it's those 5 to keep close, dearly, and continue with. And as everyone else has said, there is an excitement about it. Keep that alive. Keep the vision alive. Even if you don't know what it looks like, you know there's a feeling.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And I would like to share with you all and our listeners for sure that you can take journeys, serious journeys. And I would like anybody who don't feel well practiced in this to study with Dr. Fred Alan Wolf and his book, Mind into Matter. And actually understand that in yourself, in us, inside what we consider our bodies, and it's not in our bodies, it's what our bodies are of, okay? And that you can just go to a place where the earth is different, and that there's, you know, there's many, many time stories in any one place in our planet, and that you can select any one of those journeys. And it's beautiful to just shut everything off, have nothing on you, no technology, and not a book, not anything seeding thought that you're going to follow. Just being on your own, being out there in open space where nothing is nothing, and you have become the nothingness.
and just ponder on that and sit there and allow your mind to actually begin to take you on the journeys that you are made up of. Our DNA is nothing but a library of existence of time before time. And that in understanding that, you know, how much reality can we say that we haven't already experienced the inner earth? You know what I mean? And that when we live in a world of where we know there are tribal peoples who can share the fact that they came out of the inner earth, you know, and everything they geologically have shared, our scientists have proven. So how did they get that information if they're 2,000 feet down? You know what I mean? So, I mean, there are those little tricky moments where you actually get some backup to what sounds so beyond reality to other people. And that we're doing that. Each one of us, any one person who lifts themselves up from that pit of darkness and that disbelief and that hardwired skull that actually says, no, that doesn't make sense, or no, it couldn't be. Okay, do not limit Creator and the magic that we are the co-creator and that the imaginal realm is the true reality. And you get out of the box. And you can do that by just sitting someplace and having nothing to entertain you, nothing to set a stage for you, and just explore you. And then you become this person that now has a new track and a new neuronet, and you begin to find the unknown all around you. And that is the very essence of what keeps me going every day. And the excitement I have, and the fact that I can't experience tiredness because I'm always jacked, I'm always energized, and I just want to not miss anything. And so at this point in everything that we're doing, you and I are walking through people's sacred space by actually talking and them listening with their beautiful minds and their beautiful beings. And that this is the reality of our world, and that we need to extend kindness and compassion to those who have not at this point engaged in the unknown. And that's where our love has to be stronger than the resistance. And we are doing that. And definitely on our program, the Quantum Leap Book Club, we have our whole goal and our intent is to take you there with us and to know that we know you're listening. And I'm going to ask one more thing for you. Please go to our Facebook, the one mine you're responding to, but there's the one that we have for the program. Please come back and talk to us. Where are you at? How are you going with this? And what's its effects with you? That's important to us. And to wish you as much enjoyment of that journey as ever you could possibly have dreamed. And with that, we're going to close for this week. And we look forward to you. Please don't stop with us in the book. Go back through this book. For someone that's entering into this, reading this book 10 times, you'll still not be able to actually get the rest, the fullness of it. So please stay with us and get your book and study it and take note of what we're sharing so that you can go through it at your own pace and time. And so at this point, I'm going to ask you to stay good this week, be well, be safe, and we'll see you next week. Meanwhile, enjoy all good things. OCL.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.